Welcome back to Eco Talk, and we are talking to Dr. Michael Golobetter. We're about to say hello to him. He is the executive director of one of my favorite progressive organizations, Redefining Progress. The group is based here in the San Francisco Bay Area, but Mr. Golobetter is actually vacationing in France this week. Was kind enough to call in, though it wasn't easy with the phone lines in Europe disrupted by today's London atrocity. Again, we're taping the show Thursday afternoon. We're hoping to bring, we had been hoping to bring you some late news on any action that might take place at the G8 in Scotland on climate change, but that has been interrupted. We hope not completely canceled because of the atrocities that took place in London today. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Hey, thank you.
All eyes have been on the G8. What do you think? Nothing really has happened so far, other than I heard that Bush and Blair did meet briefly, and of course they could not bridge their differences over climate change. And Blair has been such a strong leader on this issue, and it's just, I mean, obviously today's tragedy, a shame on so many different levels. But we were waiting for Blair to really give it to Bush and to say, wake up, you know? It's appearing that may not happen that moment.
No, I mean, I have to say, I don't know how, whether the news hit in the United States, but about 4 days ago, when I was in England, the headlines were that secret papers had leaked that Blair had written off the Bush administration in our country in terms of making progress on climate change. They're pretty uncomfortable and unhappy with the position the U.S. is in right now. And this morning I watched them hold a joint press conference, and I think Blair put the best face possible on the idea that it was really now a post-Kyoto discussion. And I think in that context, we have to, you know, try to do our best in our country to take that seriously. I mean, as I think you've probably talked about in the prior segment, the clock is running down, and 2012 is right around the corner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so just go beyond, just skip over it altogether. And people say even, you know, Kyoto doesn't go far enough.
No, that's right, it doesn't. I mean, Kyoto takes us about like 8% of the way towards what is an eventual need to cut emissions by 75 to 85% just to stabilize it at a global doubling of CO2, which in and of itself may have is already having disastrous consequences and may have even more severe ones. I mean, there's a lot of uncertainty in this business, and it's not that the science, that climate change is uncertain, that warming is uncertain. It's that the extent of the damage is uncertain.
Right. So here the science is saying, you know, Kyoto doesn't go far enough. And here's W saying Kyoto would wreck our economy. You know, in his mind, it goes too far. What's wrong with this picture?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what Redefining Progress is really all about. I mean, at the end of the day, you could look at the last 6 months, honestly, as basically a giant payout for the oil companies. It's sort of, you know, in the stock market they call it reaping the benefits, so to speak, of a high price period. I think the last 6 months since the election, if you look at the stock market, you look at the performance of the high capitalized stocks, it's been the oil companies that have been cleaning up. We've been paying a lot more at the pump for oil. It's not really due to shortages or disruptions. It's due to signals that are being sent in the market, and people are trying to fill their pockets as quickly as they can in an administration that's committed to keeping America addicted to oil.
Fossil fuelishness.
Yeah, and the sad part, of course, is that it's going to leave our economy and in the tank and our pocketbooks empty.
I mean, isn't part of the thirst coming from China and India, and isn't that not going to be a constant factor as we go forward into the future?
You know, I think it's really hard to sit from the United States and point our fingers outwards.
We're pretty big consumers here.
Yeah. It's, you know, I think at the end of the day, and it's really, the thing is, you know, what I really hate about this is all the sort of bad news people, you know, and Bush is sort of busy worrying about the damage to our economy from taking action, when in fact we're missing huge opportunities for growth and job development. You know, a study we did back in 2000 showed that you could generate 1.5 million new jobs over the next 12 or 15 years from an aggressive climate change policy. You could have moderately increased economic growth. The fact is, taking action on climate change is good for the U.S. economy. Breaking any addiction.
And not taking any action will certainly be bad for, you know, clean technology development in this country.
That's right. I mean, you know, the it's not just clean technology development, it's the future of our largest corporations, whether it's the airline industry or the automobile industry or the trucking industry, all the transportation industries. These are sectors that need to modernize. They're woefully out of date compared to the rest of the world. And this is a great opportunity for us to modernize and rewire our whole economy. I mean, the strength of our economy is not in flaring natural gas out of the tailpipes of SUVs. and yet we seem to be protecting those sectors more than others.
And big business seems to be catching on. I think they're starting to see that their self-interest is wrapped up in, you know, us getting smart about climate change and getting off fossil fuels. But I've heard some of those company executives don't want to make the president look bad by coming out, you know, for, you know, more aggressive reductions of CO2 emissions, which is doubly outrageous.
Yeah.
They're looking to protect. Sorry.
Go ahead. Yeah, no, I mean, at the end of the day, it is. They were looking to protect. I think they are looking to protect their bottom line. I don't know if they're just motivated by politics. The administration has been punitive to companies that have tried to take proactive action. There's no question about it. At the same time, the companies, a great deal of them, particularly in Detroit, some of the large auto companies, they're looking at bailout scenarios. You know, I mean, how else would you explain that 117 new coal-fired power plants are being planned right now in the United States? If the coal industry can get half of them permitted, and then how are we going to join an international treaty on climate change? A bailout is the only scenario I think is plausible. So you're really looking at a giant corporate welfare program here, with Bush is stepping away from the plate here.
I don't know whether to laugh or cry. I mean, this would be funny if it wasn't so serious in terms of, you know, the administration taking punitive action against proactivity to combat global climate change. This is a bad joke, but it's not.
No, I mean, what happens is when companies speak out, the administration looks at its platter of enforcement actions and skews them against those companies so that that people find large companies, their competitors, all of a sudden given a pass on things like new source review, which is the way you force companies to retrofit their power plants, for example. You find the companies that have been proactive on that front trying to clean up the air for the public, in fact, being left behind those that are now given a pass by the administration. So there's been a disturbing history of that kind of punitive action. But more
in this administration, this is unique to this administration.
But more seriously, we're all being punished.
Exactly.
Because at the end of the day, we're being kept from a 21st century economy. And the sad part again is that this is not rocket science, and it's not hard. I think the science of climate change is settled. I think it's clear we have a global warming problem on our hands. But what's not settled is the fact that our country's been paying through the nose for our addiction to fossil fuel.
Through the nose.
Our economy has been suffering radically, certainly for the last 3 or 4 years, and you can look back at some of the other periods in history. We calculated after the Bush administration stepped away from Kyoto in 2001, Redefining Progress estimated that just stepping away from Kyoto was probably about a $46 billion a year subsidy. It swamped the energy bill in terms of a subsidy to the fossil fuel industry.
And even though we have to move past Kyoto, I know that I just can't get over every time, you know, Bush says Kyoto will wreck our economy. That's such a good George W. word, too. We'll wreck our economy.
Yeah.
I just can't help but think of David Brower's words, you know, there are no jobs on a dying planet, not to mention the points you just raised.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the good news, of course, is that people like Governor Schwarzenegger, Pataki, Romney, Republican governors, people who are likely presidential candidates, Republican senators in the Senate, and, of course, a whole host of Democrats around the country, including 150 cities nationwide, have committed to levels beyond Kyoto, have said that Kyoto is just the first stepping stone. The governors in New England have said they need to cut emissions by 75% to 85%. Schwarzenegger in California, Governor Schwarzenegger, went one step better and set a date on that. He said by 2050, he wants California to have cut emissions by 80%.
Okay, so go ahead.
No, those are great actions. I think, you know, it's basically we're being, you know, held hostage by an oil dictator at the national level, but people at the local and state level are taking action.
Well, how long can he be, you know, ostracized? They should end the G8 by giving President Bush a golden ostrich award. He's complete, you know, just increasingly isolating himself, but
well,
taking us all with him.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that he's holding out is his aid to Africa that he's offered. And I don't know the calculus of the G8 the leaders are following. You know, their hope is to deal with both poverty issues and climate change. And my hope is that they get something out of our country, because we deserve to be participating more than we are.
Is he going to kind of bribe them, say, we'll relieve some of the debt if, you know, you guys will go along with me and not talking about climate change so much? Could it be that sinister?
I don't think our country is going to get away in silence from this particular moment. I think at the end of the day, this is going to be an embarrassment for us. And it's why our organizations and Redefining Progress and other environmental organizations around the country are committed to changing those policies. We have to fix the, you know, we have to fix this picture. I mean, the real problem, I think, for the United States is if you look at the atmosphere, 35% of everything in the atmosphere today that's contributing to climate change has come from the United States, and on an annualized basis going forward, it's about 23%. So we're a huge part of the problem, and Redefining Progress is really committed to fixing that. And it's not fixing it, again, the sad part is that we're not just a huge part of the climate change problem, but we're tanking our own economy along the way. Mm. So much opportunity in fixing the problem.
Mm. Well, when we come back in our last segment, we hope you can stay with us, even though you are vacationing in France. We've got a pretty good phone line. We want to talk about Redefining Progress and what you are proposing that we do to, in fact, change course, help us, and what we citizens can do who are mad as heck and don't want to take it anymore and feeling a bit helpless, perhaps a little hopeless about this time. But we never want to end the show without a call to action. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Eco Talk on Air America Radio.
And waste so much, how much do we really need? And how long can a dream survive that seems to thrive on greed? Political pollution is so thick and dark and dense, it contaminates and poisons common good and common sense.
Let's take our heads out of the sand and open up his eyes.
We are speaking to Dr. Michael Golobter. He is the Executive Director of Redefining Progress. That is the nation's leading think tank focused on developing sustainable economic and environmental solutions. And nowhere does the economy and environment merge more than at the G8. Underway, as we are taping the show on Thursday afternoon in Scotland. And Michael Golobter is joining us from France. Was not there for the conference, but is there on vacation, but nice enough to give us his thoughts on where we go from here post-G8. So climate change, obviously, is the big topic of discussion this hour.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, as we were talking about before the break, you know, the G8 really highlights the need. It's really the country's most powerful industrialized countries. I'd say more than half of the rest of the G8 has the word sustainability in their constitution. And what Redefining Progress's mission is really to say that our economy, that economic progress in the United States is about more than the size of our economy. It's about the quality of our economy, the quality of our lives, and in some sense the equity with which we live with each other and the harmony with which we live in nature.
That triple bottom line.
The triple bottom line, economy, equity, and environment. And Redefining Progress is committed to sort of moving those policies in the United States, which is one of the most hostile environments in which to do it, partially as a result of who's in the White House right now. At the same time, it's a great opportunity for our country. If the United States could pick up the ball and run on the sustainability front, I think we'd find all of our lives vastly improved pretty quickly.
Okay, for those of us who want to do that, just that, pick up the ball and run with it, and, you know, dinosaurs, just get out of the way. What should we do? What can we do?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the first thing we need to do is realign our understanding of progress in the way that a lot of the other G8 countries have. We can't sit around with the largest wealth gap in U.S. history, the highest incarceration rate in the world, and, of course, the most profligate use of fossil fuels, and think that growing those numbers is progress, putting more people in jail, growing the top of the income pyramid, of the wealth pyramid, while leaving the bottom to languish, which is what happened for, unfortunately, most of the 90s, and abusing our natural resources and our environment the way we do. The flip side of that is that America is full of values and projects and people really committed to you know, jobs instead of jails, committed to economic growth that's based on a sustainable model of employment and education, and committed to a relationship with our planet and preservation of the great beauty that our country's blessed with. So the first thing, is often to just sort of think about how we measure progress and redefining progress. We have two measures that are known around the world, the Genuine Progress Indicator, which is an economic measure akin to the gross domestic product. But it's kind of like taking heart disease and clear-cut forests and prison time out of the gross domestic product
Obesity is part of that equation, too, right?
Obesity is what makes our economy grow.
The gross national product includes obesity.
That's right. It's obesity. It's the time you spend at the doctor because you're too fat. It's the heart disease. It's the time you spend in jail. These are numbers that we add up as if the economy was growing and that was good for us. But these aren't things that are good for us. Even, I mean, you know, the World Trade, when the day after the World Trade Center was bombed, the Wall Street Journal actually ran an editorial that said that would be good for, it would be good, just the shot in the arm the economy needed. And the GPI says, no, hold on a second. Those aren't things that really represent real progress, to spend money rebuilding craters, to spend money on heart disease. Instead, we add in things like volunteerism, time people spend with their families, and we adjust for the huge trade deficits that we have with the rest of the world so that our children inherit a better economy, not a worse one. The other measure we're really well known for, and it, one of the reasons I am in France, is because it's very popular over here, is the ecological footprint, which is a measure of natural capital, or how much of the Earth's capacity to feed us and to take care of us we're using in any given time. And again, unfortunately, the United States, because we don't measure this stuff and pay attention to it, we're pretty far down on the spectrum. If everyone on the Earth lived as we do in the United States, we'd need about four planets to supply our needs. And so the first step, really, Betsy, is to get the measurement right. And that's one of our major programs, the Sustainability Indicators Program. The next set of measures are really policies. What kind of policies can we do to move those measures in the right direction? Land use policies, we do a lot of work with a tool called Scenarios for Sustainability that help rapidly growing areas understand the impacts of their growth and how they can plan growth to increase equity, to increase wealth, and to reduce the footprint that people, the shadow in some sense that we cast on the earth with sprawl. Another major piece of work we're doing in a number of states is to work with the governors and the legislatures that are committed to fixing climate change and to help rewire state economies at a really tough time for them for the future.
I really think Redefining Progress is one of the most forward-thinking groups out there. How can people join up with you? And you must have a website?
Yes, we do. It's www.redefiningprogress.org. That's www.redefiningprogress.org. And a lot of the work you can see on there. We also just recently released an essay entitled The Soul of Environmentalism, which is really both a challenge to the environmental movement and points some of the big ways forward for the environmental movement in the United States, a way of redefining environmentalism to be broad enough to include things like social justice and economic growth in ways that help more Americans.
I wanted to ask you about that, but we just have about a minute and a half left. So just since you brought it up, Soul of Environmentalism, did environmental justice get enough attention during World Environment Day?
I mean, well, thanks to a lot of the great groups in the Bay Area, absolutely. A lot of them, including Urban Habitat and Van Jones's group, the Ella Baker Center for Criminal the Ella Baker Center, they stepped up to the plate and really drew attention to cities around the world. But it's really hard to have a World Environment Day focused on cities and not understand the social justice implications of urbanization. Cities are places where people come together. They're places where there's a tremendous amount of hope. But they're also places that are often segregated, full of pockets of great poverty and fear. And World Environment Day just sort of scraped the edge of the iceberg with that, thanks really to the groups in the Bay Area that really stepped up to the plate and pushed that forward on the agenda.
Yeah, we had Van Jones on here, and I had not talked to him after the event, but heard he was a little disappointed that things didn't go deeper. But then again, what can you do in 3 days?
Well, that's true. I mean, look, it was amazing that the world was willing to host World Environment Day in the United States, and I think San Francisco and the other cities that participated from the U.S. showed the flag for a country that really needs to do some more catch-up.
Appropriate. I mean, really late that we're hosting it, since, as you said, we are the biggest contributor of greenhouse gas emissions.
Yeah. But the great news, you know, a lot of people showed up with some great programs. There's a lot of action on the ground. The White House, as you said, has its head in the sand.
And hand in the cookie jar.
That's right. And the rest of the country is trying to take action.
Okay. We thank you for joining us, Dr. Michael Golobter of Redefining Progress, taking time out from your vacation in France. Bon voyage. And the rest of you have a great green week. You're listening to Eco Talk on Air America Radio. See you next time.
How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much and how much longer?